I want to read to you from 1 Peter 1 as we start today. To God's elect, exiles scattered throughout the provinces, you've been chosen according to the foreknowledge of God the Father through the sanctifying work of the Spirit to be obedient to Jesus Christ and sprinkled with his blood. I'm a big fan of church, which will relieve you given my line of work. I've always liked it. I think some people, when you talk to them, and then you talk to them about their childhood experiences of church, for those who went to church as kids, and they, I don't know, I've heard this story a lot where they say, oh, church was really boring and rubbish when I was a kid, and then when I grew up a bit, then I encountered God and everything changed. But that wasn't really my experience. But I've always loved church. I think one of the things I like about church is that sometimes, I don't know if you ever do this, you look round church and you think, there is no other situation where we would all be in the same room. Have you ever think that? You just sit round and you're like, how on earth did I end up in a room with this lot? I'm not saying I do that here. You can decide for yourself. But you think, what is it? There's some of my most powerful memories of my life, things that I look back and think that blew my mind, were in church gatherings where we came together as the body of Christ. And there was something about looking to God, or the worship, or the music, or what the fellow at the front was talking about, or the reading that was brought. I don't know, there was something about some teaching that woman brought, or whatever it was that just, I don't know, changed my life. Changed my way of thinking, changed my way of experiencing God. I hope it's not just me. Well, what? Okay. Good. I love it. And then I was hearing what Beth spoke about last week, about how we're all missionaries all the time. Well, what is church then? Is it what we do on Sunday? Is it who we are? Is it what we do in the week? Anyway, there's a lot called the LICC, and they've produced this stuff called Frontline Christianity. So my aim over the next few weeks is to use a bit of what they've put together, use a little bit from what I've thought about from the Sermon on the Mount that Cynthia's just brought, and hopefully come up with something that's helpful to us as we think about what it means to be a Christian, what it means to be church, what it means to go to church, what it means to be church, and all the rest of it. So, we've been on holiday. As you can probably tell from the shade of Charity's face, she goes a lovely shade of brown. I just go red, but whatever. We've been on holiday. It's been very nice. And we went to Spain. You can tell it was a Pancaldi family holiday because we went to the Loxleys. We go to Melton Mowbray. That was the Loxley family holiday. The Pancaldi is slightly more exotic as a family. And then we go to, it helps to marry into a family who have got rich relatives. That's all I'm saying. Because apparently people own villas. Who knew this was a thing? But anyway, some relative of Charity's does. And then, so anyway, we went to Spain. And the reason I tell you this is because in Spain, we went to a bit called La Manga. And it's strange. It's strange to go to that bit of Spain because there's a lot of English people. So if you've ever been abroad and you think, oh, I didn't realise I was in sunny Yorkshire. And it's just, you're walking down. So someone said that I could recreate my holiday in the UK by wearing my swimming trunks, walking into Greg's, pointing at a sausage roll, shouting, two, and then paying with a £50 note. And there were times where it felt like in Spain. And you see these people, these groups of people on the beach or by the pool or in the bars or in the rest. And there's just these groups of English people. Now, from my limited experience of Spain, it's only the second time I've been, but my limited experience is that there are these big groups of English people who live there. And they fall into two distinct categories. Category number one, Brits abroad sticking together. Now, these people make zero effort to learn the local language. They only hang around with other British people. They form these little cliques and bubbles of Britishness. And they only seem to talk about Spanish local people in kind of derogatory terms. Kind of slagging them off, saying, oh, if only we were back in Britain, then this, blah, 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 blah. You may have encountered these groups of people in Spain or France or various other expat communities. Then there's another group of people who throw themselves into the local culture, and they learn the language, and they only speak the language, and they don't hang around with any English people, and they just hang around with locals, and after a couple of years, they just feel like part of the furniture. They're just basically locals, and you won't be able to tell their grasp of the language is brilliant, etc., etc., etc. Now, the reason I'm telling you all of this is not to show off the fact that I got to go on a fancy holiday to Spain, though it was lovely. It's that we are described in Scripture as Christ's ambassadors. We are told in the Bible that we belong to another kingdom than the one we are living in. There are a lot of similarities between Christians and expats living in Spain. Because the British people in Spain know that although they may live in Spain, really, really, they are British. They belong to another kingdom. And equally, as Christians, we know that although we live here, there's something in us that is more aligned to the kingdom of Jesus than the place where we live. We belong to another kingdom. We serve a different king. I do not care what political party you support. Ultimately, our allegiance lies with Jesus. Don't care what nationality you were born into or what passport you have. Ultimately, our allegiance lies with Jesus. It doesn't matter where we live or postcode we have. We are Christians. We follow Christ. And there are two types of Christians. There are those who don't bother to learn the local language, who only hang around with other Christians, and they can't communicate with anyone outside of their Christian bubble. They use phrases like sanctified by the blood of the spotless lamb. And people who don't go to church think, what on earth are you talking about? And they just hang around with other Christians and they never spend time with anyone who's outside of church. And they just go to the church and they just hang around with more church-going people. And the only time they talk about people who aren't at church is to slag them off. And they become their little Christian cliques. There are other Christians who throw themselves into the culture. And they speak to people outside of church. And to be honest, they never hang out with Christians. They never spend time in church. They never spend time reconnecting with their real roots. And after a few years, you couldn't tell them apart from everyone else. We have to find a tension, don't we? There's got to be a middle ground between only hanging out with other Christians and not looking like a Christian between Monday and Saturday. Peter says in 1 Peter 1, I'll read it again, to God's elect, exiles scattered throughout the provinces. You have been chosen according to the foreknowledge of God the Father through the sanctifying work of the Spirit. This is a good picture from LICC. It's gone. Where's it gone? Where's the good picture gone? Ah, there's a good picture. No, the other one. So this one here is a symbol of what we do on a Sunday, where we gather together as red dots, as Christians, as people who profess to follow Jesus, the ones who have him as our king. And then the one on the right is kind of us, like, whatever you do tomorrow. I don't know what you do tomorrow. Go to work. Might see your family. Might go to the shops. Might stop at home reading. I don't know. Got some neighbours. This is us on a Sunday. This is us Monday to Saturday. And what we wanted to get, I think, is a mentality that we are cool, we are chosen, we are set apart, not in order to retreat to ever decreasing small Christian huddles where we only ever spend more time with more Christians and do more Christian things and we never know how to talk to anyone who's not a Christian. But no, we need to gather together. That's why I said I love church at the start. I want to gather together. I want to involve myself in gatherings of Christians in order that I am better the rest of the week. In order that I influence my friends and my peers and my families for good. In order that I represent Jesus in a good way. Because, no offence, but I don't really want to spend all of my life in church, like in a church building, in a church meeting. I mean, that would just be boring. But you'd definitely get sick of my voice. That's guaranteed. But when we come together, we are doing this in order to equip ourselves for what our life is like tomorrow. What we're doing on Tuesday morning, whatever our front line is. I think our Sunday gatherings, or our Sunday afternoon gatherings, or our small groups, it's a little bit like going up a mountain. That's why I've got the mountain back. We featured this last sermon series. And it's so good, I feel that we need to wheel it out again. Here it is. And I've been thinking about some of the mountainside experiences. Cynthia read to us from Matthew 5. This is Jesus preparing for his greatest sermon, where he's going to tell his followers how to live life. And where does he do it?
On a mountain.
When Moses is receiving the Ten Commandments and he has the most incredible encounter with God, where God speaks to him face to face, where does it happen? On a mountain. When Jesus is transfigured and Peter, James and John get a glimpse of the divinity of Christ as they see Jesus in all his glory, where does it happen? On a mountain. Because there's something about mountains where God says, come up here and rest a while. Where God says, you need to spend time coming up to meet me. And I think those three stories illustrate what we do, hopefully, on a Sunday, when we gather together. I think sometimes, like the disciples hearing Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount, we gather together to be family and to learn something. Those people went up the mountain to hear Jesus, and they were kind of together as a group, and hopefully you learn some stuff on Sundays, or on your small groups, or at messages, whatever it is. We gather together to learn something. Moses goes up the mountain because he needs to hear from God. I don't know what your week's been like. It could have been rubbish. Could have been brilliant. But I'm pretty confident that this morning, you need to hear from God. You need to hear something. You need some direction. You need some reassurance. You need some promise. You need some ideas. You need some inspiration. You need some something of him. Go up the mountain in order to correspond, to dwell with, to hear from God. Maybe, like the Transfiguration, I just want to have my mind blown by how good God is. I just want to go up the mountain. I just need to go and meet God. It's why I said that some of you might need to go on more walks in nature, because you might just need to have your mind blown by a sunset. You might just need to go up the mountain by yourself and encounter God and have your mind blown by how good and awesome and wonderful and gracious he is. I hope something of that happens on Sundays. I hope that as you gather, as we get together as Christians, as we are the people on the dots on the left, that as we do that, something about that experience teaches us something. Something about that experience means that we hear from God. Something about that experience blows our minds. But I went to India once. It was fantastic. And I went to one of the most beautiful places I've ever been, which is called Kerala. You might not have been there, but it's normally on the back of PG tips packets, like, you know, the little pictures where they show you, this is where your tea is from. Anyway, those pictures. I took a picture here, so if you like most photos, it doesn't really do it justice. Anyway, it was one of the most beautiful places I've ever been, and we went up this mountain in order to spend a few days in Kerala, and it was stunning. Honestly, it was beautiful. You can't really see it very well here, but it was amazing. It was not only good visually, it was good spiritually. Felt like you got away from the, like, clammy air and you could breathe properly. Felt like I got a new perspective on the world. I felt like I could connect with God in a different way up there than I could. And we had some fantastic time there, and I'm sure that you guys have done something similar. Be it walking up a hill locally, be it going on holiday to the Alps or something, I don't know. But you can probably picture some places you've been by yourself or with family where it's just blown your mind. Where you just had an amazing time. Where you've been able to breathe clearly. But I tell you what, at no point did I think, oh, it'd be lovely to live here. I mean, can you imagine trying to get Tesco delivery up there? It would be a disaster. I mean, there was nothing. There was nothing to do other than look at the beauty. I mean, it was lovely, don't get me wrong. But at no point on that mountaintop experience did I think, oh, it would be nice to live here. So we shouldn't do that with church either. Yeah, we come up the mountain and we encounter God to learn something, to hang out with our friends, to dwell with each other and to learn something from each other and from God. Yes, we come up for the experiences of God and to hear from him. But at no point should we think, oh, I'll tell you what, this Sunday morning's good. We should just do this every single day. No, you're not designed to live on the mountain. The mountain is meant to equip you for what you do when you go back down into the valley. That's why Moses gets the Ten Commandments. And God doesn't say, well, now you've got the Ten Commandments, sit here and I'll give you some more rules tomorrow. No. God says to Moses, take it down to the people. And Moses comes down with his face shining because he's been equipped to influence the people that he's around. When the people go up to hear Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, Jesus doesn't say, I'll tell you what, guys, let's just all live here in some kind of commune. No, Jesus says, this is how I'm teaching you to live the rest of your life. So next time you see a Roman soldier, act like this. At the Transfiguration, Peter, my favourite disciple, who I think I've said only opens his mouth to put his foot in it. And that's why I think I like him. I can relate to him. And Peter says, this is amazing, Jesus. Let's just build some tents. Let's build some tents here and we can just chill out and enjoy the glory. And Jesus says, in not quite so many words, you idiot, you've missed the point.
Because Peter goes up on the mountain, has this experience of God, and God doesn't say, just live here now. He says, you've experienced this, so now go down and influence the world. You've experienced this, so go and influence your family. You've experienced this, so go and influence your friends. You've experienced this, so act differently when you're in the queue at the co-op. You've experienced this taste of Jesus, so act differently when you're on the phone to your family. You've experienced this, so act differently when you're sitting at your workplace. Act differently when you're hanging around the water cooler and there's a temptation to criticise other people who are working in your office. Act differently when you're queuing in traffic. Act differently. Why? Because we've encountered God on the mountain. But we're not meant to live there. We're meant to take that and live differently. Which is why that picture, simply, if we could press down, it'll come up again, is so useful. We gather together on a Sunday or Tuesday or a Monday night or wherever it is as believers to encounter God, to learn something, to hear from Him, to have an encounter with His glory. But don't let it stop there. Because church isn't about the gathering. It's about gathering in order to affect us the rest of the week. It's about carrying the red dottedness with us wherever it is that we go. Tozer said, has it ever occurred to you that 100 pianos, all tuned to the same fork, are automatically tuned to each other? So 100 worshippers meet together, each one looking to Christ, and we are in heart nearer to each other than they could possibly be were they to become unity conscious and turn their eyes away from God and strive for closer fellowship. God has set you apart. It's what Peter says. You are chosen. He has a plan for you. You are chosen and you are scattered. You are uniquely equipped, not to stay here all week, but to live your life for His glory and grow His kingdom. You are a missionary where you are. When you go to the co-op, when you draw a picture, when you're on the bus, when you're at work, when you're running a business, when you're on the phone to your family, you are equipped by God. You are His chosen child, and you can make a difference where He has placed you. We're going to watch a video to finish, and then Chelsea's going to come and lead us in a final song, if that's going to work. Thanks, Cynthia. But I'm going to pray. Father, we thank You that You have given us all a job to do. You have called us to different families or different streets or different workplaces, to different jobs. We ask that we would reflect Your glory.